Hello, this is Sharon Steitler, the bird chick, and I am here with non-birding Bill.
What up?
It's our goal to podcast. And I just came back from the Midwest Birding Symposium.
And boy, are your arms tired. You walked into that one.
You have used that so many times in the podcast. And in this marriage, it needs to stop.
It's a classic.
No, it's not. No.
It is.
No.
It really is.
No. No. No, it's not. No.
People vote on Twitter.
The only possible thing that could be worse would be two things. Using the word birders, the phrase, birders flock.
Uh-huh.
In
okay.
the news headline.
I can work that in.
Or bird watchers flock. Same
For sure.
thing. Or the horrible song, The Bird is the Word.
Surfin' Bird!
I hate that song!
I know you do, because they play it every single time you're on the TV.
No, they don't. Well, they don't, because I'm not on TV as much anymore. But yeah, I just remember how relieved I was.
Big Surfing Bird came out against you, and you didn't learn your lesson.
I hate that song, because it's just a guy saying bird over and over and over.
Thank you for explaining Surfing Bird to our listeners.
And
I'm sure they appreciated that.
Saying it in a pleasant voice.
I appreciate you taking the strong stand, the brave, courageous stand that Surfing Bird is a nonsense song where a guy says the word bird a lot.
Don't get me wrong. I like nonsense songs. Popcorn Man. I'm a little weenie looking for a bun. These are nonsense songs. The Surfin' Bird song is horrible. And
so,
if you ever send it to me on Facebook and you wonder why my reaction to it was probably not as friendly as you'd hoped.
So what you're saying is you don't want to know about the bird.
I already know about the bird.
Oh, you don't want the bird.
I got a bird for you. So, I attended.
You flocked.
Aw, damn it, Bill. I totally flocked out of Midwest Birding Symposium.
You got the flock out of there.
I got the flock out. I drank a flocking lot, let me tell you. So, apparently, like, one of the things... This time it was in Bay City, Michigan, which... Okay, so, in theory, the Midwest Birding...
And were you on there on S-A-T-U-R-D-A-Y night?
I don't even know what to do with you right now. Why do people like you again?
Because I annoy you.
So, apparently it was in Bay City, Michigan, because there are apparently a bunch of bars, more bars per capita there than anywhere else in the U.S.
Okay.
So it cracked me up. So on the day that there was a, they call it Birds and Brews over there, but it's Birds and Beers, and I hosted it with Shelly Martinez. And I'm sorry I didn't get more time with Shelly. But anyway, before that, there was a happy hour. So there was a happy hour at the symposium. Then after the symposium, you went to Birds and Beers.
Right.
And because, like, oh, yeah, we're kind of done with this bar. Let's go to this bar across the street.
Got kicked out, let's be honest.
So, like, by the time I went to the third bar, and I'm like, wow, this is really good. And it's like, I'm kind of supposed to be doing some field trip in the morning. I should maybe go to bed. Everybody else went to, like, a fourth drinking place after that. It was great. It was awesome. So, no, it was good. I always feel like it's the mark of a good symposium when I come home
when
with ideas.
When people get fucked up at bars?
When people get fucked up at bars,
yeah.
But no, when I come home with ideas. Oh, speaking of which, at Birds and Beers, I met one of your fans.
Oh, great.
Actually, I met someone who is a podcast fan, and I made sure to get this recording at Birds and Beers so you can hear it. All right, state your name.
My name is Allison Lee.
Okay, who do you like better, me or non-birding Bill?
I like Sharon Steitler better. She brings all the info.
Suck it, Steitler.
Okay, I don't have a reaction that a bird watcher... You found the one bird watcher who prefers listening to you over me. Congratulations. Is that a lifer for you?
Yes, it is.
Okay, good. Well, I'm happy for you.
Yeah, that was at Birds and Beers. Actually, she came up and she's like, I do like Bill, but yeah, I like you too. It was almost and like she was throwing me a bone
like
before I was courting
you.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, she likes me better.
I'm if I was invested in this podcast at all, I would be taken aback. I don't think people realize I'm being forced at gunpoint to do this.
Being forced at Jameson Point
to do this.
Yeah,
exactly.
But, no, the symposium was great. There were some weird things there, and I don't mean weird bad, I just mean...
I assume if you have a gathering of bird watchers, there's going to be something weird there.
It got weird.
Did you solve the mystery of the headless bird? Was it old man Eli the entire time?
No. I think birding is going to the next level.
So to a level, then.
Convention-wise. Because sure. You and I, we go to science fiction conventions. They're not our first rodeo.
Right.
There was a guy dressed as John James Audubon.
Oh, okay.
Leading field trips.
Sure.
As John James Audubon.
Was he asking everybody for money?
His French accent needed a little work.
Well, I'm sure John James Audubon's did, too.
No, Audubon totally was French.
Sure.
He would, if he was speaking English, he would have been going, oh,
yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's what French people do.
That's what every single
French person I've ever met does.
No, but the guy, I mean, he was...
And he had onions around his neck, I'm sure.
Which was the style at the time.
Yeah.
But, so he did that, and then he was also the luncheon keynote, and it was fascinating, but I kept hoping, I was just hoping that as Audubon is going about and doing his spiel, that there just would have been an angry Scotsman who stood up and said, "Ach, Audubon, you bastard!" Oh god, I'm slipping into, I should not do accents, I can do accents great. Well,
yeah.
But anyway, I wanted someone, you know, being Alexander Wilson, to just kind of like stand up and say, "Yo, Audubon. How about that time you plagiarized my grouse?"
Well, now you know to pack your Wilson costume in.
Wilson.
Sure, why not?
I'm not all. I mean, Wilson was kind of a hot dude. Well, if you look at the pictures of Wilson, he was all dark and tortured. And anyway, I just really wanted. I was like, oh, this would be really great if like someone just stood up and just, you know, this whole argument between like a French Audubon.
I think you should do it, but you should do it like as one of the Lord of the Rings dwarves, like Gimli or something. So you should have like the full armor and like the long beard and stuff, and maybe an axe.
Wilson really didn't have that much of a beard. Yeah, you're getting inaccurate. But anyway, I suddenly had this idea for a play. Wouldn't it be awesome if there was like, it could be like Amadeus, you know, Audubon would be Mozart and Wilson would be Salieri, this dark, tortured poet, drawing birds accurately dead and then not understanding why people like the flamboyantly charismatic Audubon drawing so much more.
That sounds like it would do well over $20,000 opening weekend at the box office.
Hey, I'll take $20,000. But, so yeah, no, he was interesting. And apparently the guy that cosplays as Audubon,
sure,
he has a whole stable of characters that he'll do. He'll do Darwin.
He'll do John James Audubon in a top hat. He'll do John James.
No, he okay. does Mendel.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, he has a host of characters that you could have come.
I have to imagine, I mean, and I'm, you know, whatever, I'm sure I hope he enjoys this, and I'm, you know, science education, hooray. It must be very easy to cosplay characters if nobody knows what they sounded or acted like.
We could have an idea of what Audubon would have a French accent. And actually, what was interesting was I was kind of commenting about, hey, there's a guy cosplaying as Audubon at this, because I thought it was interesting, you know, something unique and kind of fun, you know. But there were some people who was like, why isn't he black? It's like, oh yeah, that's right. Audubon wasn't necessarily white. And then
he
was like
biracial, wasn't he?
He was, but there's some speculation that was kind of kept quiet. So basically, sure. His dad was a French ship captain, and his mother, biological mother, was...
a riverboat queen.
A Haitian slave.
Oh, okay.
Or, I'm sorry, a Haitian bedchamber...
okay.
made. But okay. Anyway, I mean, so he was biracial, but there's some speculation that maybe he was passing and all this. Okay. But essentially, I remember as a kid being at Burger Chef. Do we remember what Burger Chef is?
Oh, yeah, Burger Chef and Jeff.
You are like one of two people who remember Burger Chef.
Oh, I went
and
to
Jeff.
Burger Chef all the time. I remember they had like their little, like, well, they weren't called Happy Meals at the time.
Yeah,
like
I remember,
their kids'
yeah.
meals was like a little cardboard tray with a standy thing.
Yeah, I remember.
And you
that.
Could punch it out and make a top.
And yeah, like and you could make little crowns if you were girls. Yeah, I remember that.
Well, no, they didn't have crowns. That was Burger King.
No, there was like a princess hat. One. There was a princess one that you could make. But I remember they also, during Black History Month, they had these special placemats.
Mm.
And at one point, I remember the placemat you could color in, it was John James Audubon for Black History Month. And I remember as a kid, I was like, wait, what? John James Audubon was black? No one has said this before. Anyway, there is enough evidence that John James Audubon was biracial. at the very least. Okay. And so now I'm like, wow, can just anybody come?
Did you go to the New Orleans Wax Museum with me, or were you gone by that point?
No, that was with your Australian British friends. All those sure. hot
yeah,
chicks.
Yeah, you had left by that point.
Yeah.
And
you went with a bunch of hot chicks to a wax museum in New Orleans.
Well, there were some, you know, old dudes there too. But they basically went through the history of New Orleans from sort of the second colonization by Europeans. Mm-hmm. But they did have a Audubon wax figure, and as I recall, his skin was, you know, darker than, you know, some of the very pale wax dummies that they had there.
I think, you know, because I don't think Audubon ever said that, you know, this is what my background is. Mm-hmm. But Audubon just kind of played up, and so perhaps he was just kind of tan looking rather than, I don't want to get into the whole skin color thing, but I mean, Audubon created a very specific persona for himself.
Sure.
That's one of the reasons why his paintings did so well, was that when they weren't accepted here in the U.S., mostly because he insulted all of the colleagues of Wilson, whether sure. his paintings were better than Wilson's or not, but they were always like, dude, you're just totally shitting on Wilson, and Wilson is the bomb. He went over to Europe, and he was just like, look at me, I'm this tan outdoor man, and I am, like, frontiersman.
Shitting on Wilson is my favorite Bare Naked Ladies album, by the way.
Oh, I love Alexander Wilson, and not just because we found a Wilson in our basement of the old apartment building, but...
I found a Wilson.
You found the Wilson. But anyway, no, it's just, Wilson was so tortured, he was the Dave God of the ornithology. He's all, all right. tortured.
So
the other thing that I went to that was really good,
mm-hmm.
Doug Ptolemy is his name.
Okay.
And he was the evening keynote, and he talked about the importance of trees.
You don't have these trees, you know, what are the birds going to sit in? Nothing. Birds are just going to be on the ground. What is the fun in watching that?
No, his whole thing was about, you know, there are native trees... And then there are native trees.
This sounds amazing, frankly. No. It sounds like some insane person wandered up onto the stage and started talking, and nobody had the courage to sort of like figure out who's this guy.
That's pretty much how I how I started my career.
Sure.
That's okay. The only reason I'm birching, because I just kind of wandered up and started talking.
Okay.
No, but he was talking about the importance of the types of trees that you plant. And there are some native trees, because the big push is like, oh, just put native trees in your yard and you'll be fine.
Sure.
There are some trees that are better at providing food for birds than others.
Mm-hmm.
But he started going through all these pictures of caterpillars and then birds eating caterpillars.
Mm-hmm.
So he's talking about trees, and he's like, oh, and this tree is the host for this caterpillar. And so not only is he, like, identifying the birds, he's identifying the half-masticated caterpillars in the birds' mouths and things like that. It's like, sure. That's what I want. I want to be able to identify chewed-up caterpillars that a bird is holding in its mouth. But I was like, that's the book we need right now. We need a book where someone's like,
is it?
These are the most important trees you need to know. Because I can't identify trees very
sure.
well. And so if I can identify, like, you know, maybe 10 trees and all the caterpillars that are on them and the birds that eat them, someone write this book or I'm going to write it. I don't know. I don't want to write it. I hate writing books. But this book needs to be
You need to write it, but you need to write it in terms of a woman who finds love again.
Oh, God.
There's a really great expression. I'm sorry to get back to this.
Eat caterpillar eat. Pupate.
Yeah. Butterfly. There's a really great expression, I think, and I'm sure I'm going to maul this, that somebody said, the best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The second best time to plant a tree is today. So that's great if you want to start planting trees today so that they will...
Did I tell you about the whole weirdness of cottonwoods in my park right now?
I'm going to point out the structure of the sentence you just put together and say, no, you did not.
Okay, so...
I wouldn't even rank in the top 20 weird sentences you've asked me about.
Okay, so it's weird on several levels. So my park has a partner organization called Mississippi River Fund, and they're fantastic. Sure. They help raise money for the park, and I should also actually know what they're changing their name to. Anyway, they're a great organization, and they hired an intern one summer who was working at the University of Minnesota on cottonwood trees.
Right.
So she started doing all these cottonwood surveys and noticed that there were no new cottonwoods. Pretty much like all our cottonwoods in our park corridor were mature trees. There were no new trees coming in. And cottonwoods can live a long time, but cottonwoods take some time to grow.
Sure.
So this whole fascinating thing started of, yeah, we've got a lot of cottonwoods in this park, but they're all kind of adults. There are no new pretty much cottonwoods haven't been growing for like the last 30 years. So she's doing some really interesting research, and now our park, because she noticed this, is actively trying to plant cottonwoods. Yeah. But that's one of those things where like, ooh, maybe we should have caught that sooner. But how do you catch that?
No, you need somebody who knows trees, because I only know trees, basically their size.
Mm-hmm.
You need somebody who... That's great. I'm glad.
But it's just one of those things, like, is this a climate change thing? Or what's going on? And
somebody, and it was probably... I can't remember who it was talking that there's a... People are talking. It's quite the word on the street.
Is everybody talking at you?
Yeah. It's everybody in high school is talking about it. About reintroducing chestnuts to America. Because apparently... 100 years ago, there was some sort of blight that basically wiped them out.
But there is a non-native tree.
Is it? But they have them in... Anyway, so they're the song Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire. We don't have chestnuts in America. There was a blight that wiped them out, so they're talking about...
But I thought that was the whole thing of, like, chestnuts... Aren't chestnuts a European species? I don't know. I don't think chestnuts are supposed to be here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like ginkgos or pheasants. Hey, Governor Mark Dayton, I wish you put as much attention into native species as you do to the pheasant population.
Nobody wants to hunt grouse. They want to hunt pheasants.
People totally want to hunt grouse.
Do they?
Yes, grouse. I know a lot of grouse. As a matter of fact, I've seen a lot of grouse hunters lamenting about the lack of grouse that they want to shoot. Mm. But it's like, hey, maybe, and grouse need a little bit different habitat than pheasants.
The reason why is that pheasant hunters are organized. So get organized.
Grouse hunters.
Think you're so big? Yeah, that's right, grouse hunters. I'm calling you out.
I know a couple of grouse hunters that could totally take you down. Politically and physically.
Bring it, grouse hunters.
Do you really want to... Don't bring it, grouse hunters. My husband does not know what he invokes. Do not listen to him. Don't bring it, please. But bring me your meat.
What are you going to do? Dance? Is there a dance-off?
OMFG. You are confusing prairie chickens with grouse.
Grouse don't dance.
They beat their wings against their chest.
Oh, there you go, then. That's pretty much what what was his name? Used to do on the Muppet Show. Called it ham boning.
No. Prairie chickens are the ones that dance. They dance like Milli Vanilli. I'm dead serious.
All right, that's podcast number 193, folks.
No, I'm dead serious. If you watch like Milli Vanilli do their like running in place and then jumping at each other, that's essentially what prairie chickens do.
That is the type
of dancing that they do.
I do not encourage anyone to watch Milli Vanilli doing anything.
Their
I do not support
catchy,
this.
Whether or not they were lip syncing or not. As a matter of fact, if you kind of think about the song Girl You Know Is True, ooh, ooh, ooh. That's kind of what Greater Prairie Chicken sounds like.
Really?
Ooh, ooh,
I'm sorry I brought this up.
Why do people ask me to bird conventions?
I have not the slightest idea.
And I had such a great transition between Audubon and our discussion of Wilson's and a Wilson's warbler, and now I don't know how to get to the Wilson's warbler.
Why don't you just bring it up?
Okay. The species, named after the father of American ornithology, Alexander Wilson.
Yeah.
It has a subspecies that is actually in trouble. So, there's Wilson's warblers, and then there's a subspecies of Wilson's warbler. And you know how you can tell it from other Wilson's warblers?
No, to your surprise. I do not know.
Okay, so there's a space between its beak and the black cap on its head. Because essentially a Wilson's warbler is a yellow-looking warbler that just has kind of like a black toupee on its head. So with this particular subspecies, which is the Chrysiola subspecies, I don't know if that's... it's kind of like a hint of rufous. You can kind of see between the beak and the head. There's...
I want to point out that you know this, but you can't figure out how to use the Apple TV remote in our house.
What? That's just knowing that there's a subspecies. Okay, in my defense, we've got like 5 remotes in this house.
You figured out how to use the PS3 to watch Netflix, but you can't figure out how to use the Apple remote, which has 4 buttons on it.
We have so many remotes in this house. And I'm really bitter that everything that calls itself a universal remote is not universal. Because we still have so many freaking remotes in this house. I'm sorry. Are they subspecies remotes?
They are subspecies. They're invasive species.
Maybe if you spend as much time with the universal remote as you did with the Apple remote.
All right, so what's the deal
anyway, with Wilson's? It's Wilson's warblers in general are doing okay. This particular subspecies has been in the decline. So some researchers started doing some avian CSI. Essentially, they took a couple of feathers from some of the subspecies.
Okay.
And not only are they able to figure out where they're going, but where they're hatched. Sure. And they're able to figure out that this subspecies winters in a very specific area of Cabo San Lucas, which has had... What? Why are you laughing
nothing.
About Cabo San Lucas?
Continue.
So, which has had some major developments.
Okay.
You know, ripping up habitat and taking habitat away. It's like, oh, maybe that's why they're doing so poorly. It's because they've lost a lot of their wintering grounds, and they're dying on their wintering grounds, and...
So what you're telling me is that douchebags are moving into the area and forcing them out.
Kind of. But what's exciting about this is, like, this may not
college
be
students.
The best news for this particular subspecies, but the fact that we can start doing this technology where we can take just a couple feathers from a bird when we're banding it, figuring out where it's been breeding, where it's going. Well, is it too late with Cabo San Lucas? Can we start planting some trees that would be beneficial to the Wilson's warbler?
I don't know.
So... I'm excited. I mean, it's kind of sad for this particular subspecies, but on the other hand, we figured something out, and maybe this can benefit other birds in the future.
Okay.
Maybe there's still time for the Wilson's.
That is, scientifically speaking, that is very interesting news.
I thought that was fascinating. Yeah. Just so much we can learn from just a couple of feathers.
Sure.
So, we've had another anniversary of September 11th.
Okay.
Where in the United States, there is the Tribute in Light, which basically we shoot giant... beams of light into the night in New York during prime migration season. And the weekend that this happened, it was crazy migration. Because I was watching the radars because I was supposed to be doing a bird trip the next day and I wanted to see what was going on. And it was lighting up. So BirdCast, which is part of Cornell Lab of Ornithology, has some videos of it. And before you're just like, oh, that's so terrible that this monument traps birds. Because what happens is these birds are migrating through. New York is a major part of a major migratory corridor. So when these lights go on up into the air, if it's a big migration night, songbirds just are attracted to this beam of light and they circle around. And so there are volunteers from Audubon on hand and they shut off the lights. Mm-hmm. And so the birds can kind of like, oh, hey, let's get out of here and let's just keep going south. Otherwise, they're just going to fly in the lights all night long.
Sure.
But this time, there's been video of it in the past, but this time there's video right underneath it. And it's fascinating to watch it because this time you can literally watch the birds kind of flying confusedly and trying not to dodge into each other. But you can also hear all the chip notes that they're giving.
Okay.
I kind of want to like find a way to get there with Clay and see if we could digiscope some of the birds in the beam of lights 1 year. But anyway, it's cool, and don't freak out too bad. They shut off the lights, so the birds do.
Good. I'm glad they have an environmental sensitivity in this time of memoriam.
It's really tricky because it's like, I understand why you wanted to have this, but did you have to have something that's going to really affect migration?
Well, you know. Yeah.
I know.
All right. I don't have anything to add to that.
September 11th is sad.
Yes. Thank you for that.
No, right, I'm just acknowledging. It's,
yeah.
It's a terrible time. Okay. We all have a story about how freaked out we were when it happened. We all know somebody who died from it. It's just, it's, yeah. Now I just feel like we need to acknowledge this.
Okay. Let's move on.
I got weird. Okay. Hey, since that came from Cornell, Cornell's hiring.
Okay.
They need a web designer and they have developer positions open. The upside is you'd be working for Cornell Lab of Ornithology, which is awesome. The downside is you have to move to Ithaca, New York.
Oof. Ithaca, famous for...
being really far away from Manhattan.
Famous for the home of Cornell Lab of Ornithology.
That's pretty much it. I mean, there are times I see jobs come up with Cornell. It's like, I could apply for that. I could probably get that. As a matter of fact, I think I even got into a phone interview with Cornell. And they're like, what do you think is going to be your biggest obstacle with this job? And I said, talking my husband into moving to Ithaca.
Okay.
And I was like, yeah, this interview's over.
Yeah.
Why don't you want to move to Ithaca, Bill?
Well, there's so many great reasons to move to Ithaca. For example, the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. And also...
There's heron rookery there. Well, there's a college campus there.
Why didn't you say so? Ithaca.
Ithaca. Anyway, so if you want to... We've just given a glowing endorsement of Ithaca. If you want to move into the middle of nowhere in New York...
And why wouldn't you?
Well, we know some person who has moved into the middle of nowhere in New York, and they seem relatively happy. They keep trying to talk us into going to visit them.
Sure. But not Ithaca. Ithaca!
Ithaca! Cornell Lab of Ornithology! Go apply for them. It'll be cool.
Ithaca. Even the name says, wait, where?
Yeah, anyway, so yeah, there's a bird job for you out in the middle of nowhere in New York. You could probably get
to Manhattan. That's pretty much where all the bird jobs are, though.
No. There are bird... Hey, I get bird jobs. Mm-hmm. All over the place. No, I'm not a bird hooker. That's not what I meant. Hey, buddy, you looking for a good time? I'll give you a bird job. Mm.
You have to pay to go there for 6 months, and there's no... you have to learn to shoot bears, and...
It's not one of those jobs. Yeah. No, I don't think there's bears.
I think it should be. I would love it if they had a web designer out in the middle of a field covered by a tarp with a rifle to shoot bears.
I don't know why you would have to... If you're doing web work, why would you have to move to Ithaca? In this day and age of Skype, let that person work from home.
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know either.
I don't know.
All right, speaking of bird jobs, there was an article that came up in The Independent today.
Okay.
And it was about these two guys who get a job through BirdLife International, where they basically have to live on Dublin's Rockabille Island for 3 months, monitoring and protecting an entire colony of roseate terns. And the best part is there's a picture of these two guys out there doing their work. And they have on jackets. One has on kind of a vest and a hoodie.
Yeah.
And at first glance, you might think, oh, maybe that's just colored in such a way as to camouflage. Nope, that's all tern shit that's on them. Because they talk about having to go out and check the tern eggs and monitor them and weigh stuff. It's like, yeah, and the terns don't like it and all this and the other. It's like, yeah, they're crapping on you. Because I remember, like, banding ring-billed gulls, and they fly at your head, they scream at you, and they shit on you and the whole time kind of... that you're doing it.
Amazing work you can do if you choose a career in ornithology.
But basically, it's about these two guys who basically don't know each other.
Sure.
They live on this island under primitive conditions for 3 months. There's a play. There's a play to write.
And when these two guys get off the island, they never speak to each other again.
All they talk to each other about, if they're not talking about birds, is like, God, you know what I want right now? You know what I could just really just rip into right now?
A tern.
A pizza.
A tern. I really want to eat one of these terns. Reach out and grab one.
Oh my god. Is that where I expected that to go? Oh my god. So, but it's like, but also I'm like reading this like, I could do that for 3 months. I could live with a complete and total stranger. Be shit on by turns all day.
Knock yourself out.
I can't do that while I'm married to you. Yeah. You don't want me to be gone that much. If I could do anything, I would love to have one of those midway adult jobs. I just want to go out and like live with albatross for 3 months and learn to appreciate humanity again. Why are you doing the silent laugh?
Sure, okay.
Yeah. That's what I'm gonna. If anything ever happens to you,
Bill died after this podcast.
I went to go live on Midway Adel for 3 months, and then I came back and turned into Blanche Devereaux from Golden Girls. I'm about the same age she was when she did that show. Anyway, it's a good article about two guys
getting shit on,
living out on an island for 3 months, wishing they had pizza. I would do that for 3 months. It's not that bad. I could do that for 3 months. It beats having a cube, right? Right? Right?
All right. What else you got?
There is an Indiegogo starter that I want to talk about for Peely Girl.
Okay.
She's an artist I follow on Instagram. She also tried to help me get booked at the Peely Bird Festival, where I got denied entry into Canada. But anyway, I've enjoyed her art for a long time. Well, now that coloring books are becoming all the rage for adults to do, she is turning some of her artwork into a coloring book. And so she is looking for some funding to help get that off the ground so that way she can sell her coloring books.
What's her goal?
Her goal is only $3,000.
And what's she at right now?
$688.
And how much more time does she have?
11 days.
Okay, but this is Indiegogo, so she gets whatever money she raises. Okay.
Yeah. I'm kind of looking at this like I may have done the awards differently. Mm-hmm. But anyway, if you can support her, even if you can just give her $5 or $10, yeah. She has really interesting artwork, and I would love for these coloring books to be an actual thing after it gets funded. I would love to buy one of these coloring books. Right. But no, and you should follow her on Instagram, Spiele Girl. She does some really interesting artwork. It's something, and what I like about her on Instagram, it's kind of like Julie Sikafoos when she's doing her artwork and she kind of takes pictures of her whole process of how it goes from like sketch to end bird, and that's what Spiele Girl does. And they're they're very simplistic designs, but very interesting designs. So you should support that.
Check it out.
I think it's cool. Oh crap! I forgot another thing I wanted to talk about.
All right.
And I'm sorry to end it on a downer. I accidentally this week on the internet have seen all the different ways that things eat hummingbirds.
Okay.
And I mean, I always knew about roadrunners staking out bird feeders to get hummingbirds. And I think years ago on the blog, I linked to some things through Birdwatcher's Digest of hummingbirds, you know, getting caught by praying mantises. So I was showing this to this ranger I work with named Gordon Dietzman, and we were talking about that. And as I'm Googling this, I suddenly found all these images of hummingbirds getting caught in orb weaver spiders. You know, if you have a garden and you have these gigantic black and yellow spiders, you know, sometimes hummingbirds get caught in that.
Sure.
Well, now today, just out of the blue, somebody posted on the Dead Birds Facebook group that I'm part of.
Of course you are.
It was just people posting interesting ways birds die.
Of course it is.
It's kind of a morbid Facebook group to be on, but it is one of the most interesting things. So somebody likes put a picture that was on the Birds of Facebook group, and it is a green darner with a ruby-throated hummingbird. It has caught and killed, a dragonfly has caught and killed a hummingbird and is eating it.
Okay.
It's terrifying. I'll find a way to put these on here. I'm going to have to take a screenshot because I think Dead Birds is a closed group. Anyway, if you're like me and you're just kind of fascinated by bird parts and how to identify them or weird ways that birds die, or if you're really into posting, you know, things that we already know that birds die into windows, then the Dead Birds group is for you.
All right. Is there anything else we have for this evening?
We should talk about things that I have coming up, because that is part of what I have to do. Yep. So, I have some bird tours coming up, if you want to come along. One is to the Rio Grande Valley Bird Festival, and it is through Wildside Nature Tours, and it is right after the Rio Grande Valley Bird Festival. So, you could go to the Rio Grande Valley. You could party it up there, and then you could hang out with me and Greg Miller. Greg Miller, who is played by Jack Black in the Big Ear fame. You want to do this trip because you're going to get a good mix of Greg Miller, who is hardcore lister, and me is like, all right, we've been birding enough. Let's go have a drink.
Sure. All right. When but is then that?
I have one more trip that I need to talk about.
No, when's the first trip? You need to let people know when this is.
It is in November.
Okay.
It is right after, so it's like the third week in November.
Okay.
I was not prepared for the actual date.
Well, no, that's fine. Just a general idea.
In November. And then the other trip that I have is in March, March 5th through the 13th. You want to come with me to Pico Bonito. You don't want to come with me just because it's a fun thing to say, Pico Bonito. But you want to come with me because we'll see collared arisari. And the main thing, the big target bird on this, because I have only heard it and seen its shadow, I have not actually seen the bird itself, is the quetzal. So we're going to see this giant green and red bird who has a tail that is longer than me.
Sure.
We're going to hang out at the lovely Pico Bonito. We're going to see howler monkeys. We'll see jabiru, tiger heron. We're going to see wood creeper, toady flycatcher. Basically, you want to come. You really want to go to Central America in March. And we're going to digiscope. I will show you how to take these great souvenir photos with your iPhone. You can bring your own scope. I'll have my scope. If you are coming along with me on this and you let me know what kind of scope and phone you have, I'll probably even have some adapters you can take and test out.
Okay.
Are you going to come with me to Pico Bonito?
I don't know.
Do you want to come with me to Pico Bonito?
Sure.
Do you want to come with me to Honduras? Don't you want to come with me to Central America? Mister, I've been to Hong Kong more than you.
Once. Sure, why not?
You're going to go there twice.
Yeah.
I have to find a stunt bill while you're gone to record our podcast.
Sure, why not?
All right, that's all I got.
Okay, this is Bird Chick Podcast number 193. If you have any questions for Sharon, you can talk to her on Twitter, where she is at Bird Chick. You can email her at sharon@birdchick.com, or you can find her online. She is the Bird Chick. We will be back soon.